Who are already here through BBS Radio, and I thank BBS Radio. The Monday evening call, still 8 minutes hour, and here we have another person joining on the phone line. Thank you for being here. Say your name and location.
Hello, yeah, it's just me. I was coming out of Pound One. I just, this whole experience reminded me of an experience I had over 20 years ago. When I watched somebody get beat to death.
Okay, hold on, Dwayne. We had more in on the phone line. Welcome, Doja. Please name a location.
Hello, hi. Francis from Concord, California.
Good evening, Francis. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
And more people joined in. Welcome, everybody. You want to please say your name and location? But
Michael,
only if you want.
In Camino, California.
Hello, good evening. How are you doing?
Good. How are you today? Hi.
Doing well, Michael. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right. I believe another line to come that came in. If you want to, please say your name and location.
Is that Wynn?
Not Wynn, no. Wynn is not here yet. We have an interesting topic tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Mesa, earlier, he wrote it to us, and I have it up somewhere as well.
Dave knows it.
Well, he sent out the thingy. The email.
Yes, he did. I'm looking at it.
So he's going to try and integrate everything that's been talked about for the past few weeks?
Yes. There have been pretty interesting calls, I think, on the Monday.
Hey, guys, don't forget to light your candles.
For what?
Huh?
It helps break up stagnant energy in your house and helps bring in the new energy.
Oh, that's right.
Remember we were talking about that a few weeks ago?
No.
All she needs is Julia talking to Michael, and that is all taken care of.
What?
All she needs to do is have Julia talk to Michael, and all the energy in the world comes right down this channel.
All right. You're talking about Michael in the Waterfleet?
Of course I am. You know, the famous cab driver should start his own television show. Step into my cab, I change your world. And Julia, you know who Julia is? She's the most humblest female on earth that's scared to death of the rest of us. Oh my God, when you put the two together, what do you got? Raw deal.
All right, Dane. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Oh, no problem. I can do that any day of the week. Oh, go ahead, Marilyn. It's your turn.
We're really not interested in your opinions tonight, Dwayne.
Well, nobody ever has been. That's how come you're attracted at 5:30.
What did you say?
It's
almost 9 o'clock my time. I don't know where you're at. You must be orbiting Mars or something.
No, it's called Star 6. It's just on the other side of the universe.
All right. We are live on BBS Radio. I welcome those who joined in over BBS. It's still 4 minutes until the hour. And,
oh, my God. 4 minutes to launch.
Yep. 4 minutes of welcoming people.
I love it.
Are you there, Lucy? Talk to your boy. Lucy's
probably in Pound One.
Talk to your boy. What are you talking about? It's not I'm not getting my mouth watered. I didn't say anything wrong.
Good evening and welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Good evening. Hi, this is Eric in Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello, Eric. Welcome to the call. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. And I want to thank you for the friendly reminder about lighting the candle. That was awesome.
That was Dave, yes.
Thank you, Dave.
Also from Arizona. Top of the mountain, on top of the table. Mesa. We have somebody else join in. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
This is Teresa in Indiana. Somehow I got disconnected and I am back on. And I just wanted to say what a great job you always do, Hives.
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. Well, welcome back to you.
You're welcome. You always make me feel better.
Good evening. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Nancy in Michigan.
Hi, Nancy. Good evening. Welcome to the call.
Thank you so much, Heis.
All right.
Hey, Heis. What did I miss?
What you missed is somebody that Eric in Phoenix was thanking you for the reminder regarding the lighting.
What did I remind him about?
Reminded about lighting a candle.
Oh, you're welcome. I was like, what did I remind someone about? I don't remember.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, Gail from New Jersey.
Gail, welcome to the call.
Hey, hi.
Hello, Wynn. Good evening.
Hey, and how are you?
Not. How you're doing, okay? We had more people joined in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Don in Rexville. Hi, Ice. Hi, Wynn. Hi, everybody.
Good evening, Don. And more people joined in. Welcome to you all. Please say your name and location while you still have a chance.
Yes, hello, right? Jim from Sedona. Hello.
Hi, Jim.
How are you, my
was
man?
That,
wonderful.
Was that Don or Joel?
No, it's Jim.
Don Chicago?
Joel. Hi, Joel.
Deb from Cottonwood.
Good lady.
Is that Deb Ensign?
What?
Is that Deb, who I know?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Who works at the New Age Center?
Yes, it's me.
Hi, Deb.
Hi. I have your recorder. I got to get that back to you.
Well, just let me know when you're coming through. Are you in town every day?
Yeah, I'll be in town tomorrow. Yeah, pretty much.
What are you going to do at the New Age Center?
The New Age Center.
Yeah.
What do you do there?
What do they do at a New Age Center?
New Age?
They sell books. They do readings. They have psychics, et cetera, et cetera.
New Age stuff.
The New Age store.
Yeah.
New Age store.
Hey, Jim, you have a fabulous voice. I don't know if anybody's ever told you that, but you should use it in voiceover.
Hey, I got to tell you something. Everybody tells that to Jim, and I am really jealous.
He has a great voice.
Oh, Wynn, she's not talking about me. She's talking about you.
No, she's talking about you. Now, I'll tell you something else about Jim. Jim is a phenomenal piano player. And he's not gay. He's not gay, but he sounds like Liberace. Okay.
Wow. That's fabulous.
And he does some performances at some of the old age homes here. And another talent of Jim's that he has
is he does crossword puzzles, and he actually did crossword puzzles for the New York Times. That's how good he is.
Wow.
You mean wrote them or created them?
Created them, right.
Constructed.
Okay.
Constructed. He didn't get rich.
He's the greatest cook on earth.
Oh, wait a second. I'm scared to have Dwayne repeat himself. But
Don't worry about it. I just said he's the greatest gourmet cook on earth.
Well, you haven't eaten his food, have you?
I eat him every time I listen to him.
Oh, he is a gourmet cook. He used to have a restaurant in New York.
No. Oh, that cannot be true. That cannot be true, or else it makes me to
That's
be the
worst. And now he is Terry's personal chef.
Hostess Twinkies, anyone? I bet he makes the best Twinkie ever devised by man.
Yeah, but I put candles in them.
Deep fried.
All right, it's 6:03, and I'm going to mute everybody. It's the worst Wednesday,
hey, move. That's a good move. Quick, go for it.
Hey, it's Chris right. In Memphis.
Hi, Chris. It's Terry there.
Hey, Wim.
Yeah.
Are you there?
I'm
Hi,
here.
Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, wait a second. Hang on a second.
This conference is being recorded.
Okay, now I've got the recorder going. It's 8:12, and hang on a second here. Let me see. Barbara Blair. Let me unmute. Chris, can you hear me?
Yes.
Now, did you think you had a miracle happen?
As far as my Bell's palsy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Was that... you know, Chris mentioned that. I thought I'd get it on tape. Is it okay to tape it?
Yeah,
you know, this
sure.
Kind of stuff inspires people. Yeah. You know, Chris has been coming into our calls for a couple of years, and he reminds me of a little bit like I was when I was younger, because he's a rebel, and he likes the Doors, and he was, you know, doing some things in... How would we say it? Low energy situations. And, you know, you start coming to the calls and something in me identified with him. And, but he's had a hard time. He goes, you know, I shouldn't talk about you in front of you. Why don't you tell about yourself, Chris? That way I make sure I don't say anything you don't want everyone to hear.
I don't know exactly.
You know, Chris really loves being in front of people. Except now he's in front of everybody. He's tongue-tied.
Yeah.
Just start talking. Trust spirit. If you start talking, you won't go wrong.
Well, you know, I can't do it right now.
You can't?
No.
Now, keep in mind, you could change somebody's life right now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what, I'll interview you. Can I interview you? If I interview you, does that make it easier?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, you've had this Bell's palsy, and Bell's palsy is where your face kind of breaks out or has kicks in it, something like that?
Right, it's basically paralyzed the nerve on the side of your face. It's some kind of virus like affects it.
Mm-hmm. And what causes
droop.
It? Do they know what causes it?
No. Yeah. It's that they don't know a lot about it. But it's almost like look like somebody just had a stroke. You know.
Does it ever go away naturally?
Well, for some people it does, but some people have what they call residual, you know, which what I had. And, you know, it made me very self-conscious, you know. And actually, you know, I had been asking and putting it in the light, and it just actually was just healed.
One morning you got up and it was just gone.
Yeah.
Really, really fast.
Mm-hmm. Wynn, this is Wynn. This is Francis in Concord, and I've had Bell's palsy about 2 years now, right-sided Bell's palsy. And I had it 25 years ago on the left side, and it went away in 5 months. It's the second occurrence that I have now on the right side. It's not gone away, and it probably won't. It's a subcranial nerve, and it is actually related to the herpes virus.
Well, Francis, you better keep putting it in the light, okay?
Thank you.
And see if it goes away. Let us know. Because maybe, you know, when these things happen, it always looks a little bit like, well, would it have happened anyway? Sometimes it's too big. I don't think it would happen anyway. And you can kind of say, well, maybe it would have happened anyway. But
no, it's stress.
Stress.
Stress. No.
Well, Chris never gets stress.
Yeah, but we're talking extreme stress here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I want to get into our topic for tonight, because it's going to be a really interesting one. So thank you, Francis, for sharing. And let me see here. I'm going to mute you guys. All right. You're muted. And Terry, are you there? Hello, Terry. Are you unmuted?
I'm here. Yes.
Okay. Were you muted?
Yes. I mute myself generally so that I don't make noise.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, you know, we had 3 weeks, some really interesting calls, and I got a lot of emails from people that really appreciated it. And some of you may not be cognizant of this because we're doing this in such a casual way, such a laissez-faire way, such a informal way, that there's something about what we're doing that you might be missing. I'll put it in black and white. You can see if it makes sense. We're doing something. We are, you know, I got an email. Gee, I should read this email from Michael Snyder because he was getting, here it is. We're bringing through information that has never, ever been put together in the history of mankind on these calls. We are putting together information about how things work down here, how humans got to where they are. And we're doing it in such a way that it has a certain credibility to it. It's like I never just say to our sources, well, tell us about this and go into detail, and they just lecture. Usually, I do a lot of groundwork of studying things and cross-referencing them, and then when I finally put it all together, I ask them, and they'll tell me, and they'll give more details. But they don't want to be taken as just, here's this information, we know everything, and to have it repeated. Because that takes away my discernment, takes away your discernment. So oftentimes I approach this like a detective. I approach it like, well, they said this, let me see if that's right. And I am always amazed at how it unfolds. So if you take the three, not last week's call, last week's call was the Let Your Hair Down call. People all, thank you all who came on it and said something. But 3 weeks before that, we had the first and second week, we were talking about Enlil and Enki and the creation of humans as hybrids in Sumeria, and how that all worked, and that if you weren't in on those calls, go back and listen, because they were pretty amazing. And the short story, just giving you the short story, is there were these two brothers, or one was a half-brother, that had come here from their home planet. They were sent by their father because they needed gold in their home planet. And then we'll talk about the gold in just a moment. And that South Africa was a place that they had come many times to mine gold for their planet. And that these guys were fairly advanced scientifically, and they started mining gold, and they didn't really want to do the labor. And so they made some kind of hybrid between their genes and ape genes to do their labor. And those hybrids became known as humans. And so we are in the genetic line of those hybrids. Now, that may, if you're hearing this for the first time, it may seem really out there. But this comes from at least three people who have done research on translations of clay tablets in Sumeria. One of them was quite famous, Zachariah Sitchin, who has a number of books out. And another one is Michael Tellinger, who's on a tour right now. And in fact, he's coming to Phoenix this coming Sunday, and we're going to go down and see him. And another one is a guy who was an assistant to Michael Tellinger. His name is Sasha, and I forget his last name, Sasha. And I actually found Sasha's phone number, and I talked with him, his wife, for 2 hours. And he's an anthropologist from University of California who Zachariah Sitchin worked with him for like a number of years. And when Zachariah Sitchin died, he asked this fellow to continue his work, which he has. And he has a website called EnkiSpeaks.com. Now, there's a couple things I didn't tell you as we were researching this. And this is a work in progress. There's more to this still unfolding. And I can't tell you the conclusions until it unfolds a little more. But it's a topic we're going to be coming back to because there's something in it that's huge, okay? And just to give you a couple, or let me just go back to tell the story, and then I'll give you some hints about what might be coming, and we'll talk about some of it today. We have these two brothers, and they engineered humans. One of them engineered humans, and there was to be their slaves. And the humans were being gestated in the women. And the women were not happy after doing this, particularly when they needed more of them, because they were in a constant state of pregnancy. So one of the brothers went and gave the humans the ability to procreate, did something and adjusted their genes. And so now the humans were having progeny. And the first brother was furious about this. And it had to do with some kind of prime directive that these visiting space people were not supposed to mess with the evolution of a planet. And it was okay to bring humans in, and then they would die and bring more in. But now they were procreating, and they were like multiplying big time. And the two brothers went neck and neck against each other. And the humans would run away, would keep, you know, would be rebellious. And they were trying to control the humans by telling them they had superhuman powers because they could control things like weather, like our government can do today, whether you know it or not. And they could do things, and I don't know what exactly they did, but they could create fear, and they said they were gods, and that if the humans were bad, they would be in deep trouble. Well, this is how the Judeo-Christian idea of God came around, and the humans kept procreating, and they started being nomads and going around different places, and there was a whole country with different cities called Sumeria, which was populated with all these humans. And this is where some of these records came up from the anthropologists who were translating the clay tablets in Sumeria. And at one point, each brother had a city, and there was a daughter that had another city called Inanna. And each one was worshipped as a god in their particular city. Now, this group was called the Anunnaki. And the Anunnaki were derivative from Elohim. In other words, we've talked at other times about how Elohim's souls would come into this realm, and then they couldn't go back again. And this may not be the only group, it probably isn't, but they were derivative of the Elohim. And the one brother, the one wanted to nurture and make the women grow, the women too, wanted to make the humans grow and evolve. And the other brother either wanted to kill them or enslave them. So these two brothers were fighting throughout history, and basically their competition for humans is what the Old Testament is based on. And so the early Hebrews were under the auspices of one of these brothers. And according to a lot of things that I was finding, now you see, let me give a disclaimer here. You know, when you talk about anyone's religion, and now we're going in, we've talked about Jesus, we're talking about Hebrews, you know, somebody out there is going to be listening and want to clobber me. Well, you know what? Do your own research on this. Zachariah Sitchin is Jewish, and he's the one that uncovered this. So go blame him. Don't blame me, because one of the sacred names of God for the Hebrews, which is Yahweh, was apparently Enlil, the guy that did not want to control people. And so Yahweh was a god of fear. It was a god of, if you cross me, you're going to be in trouble. It was a jealous god. And this is how that idea of God came in through the ages. Now, the other god form, now they weren't really gods, they were just advanced humans, Anunnaki, was Enki. And Enki was actually having relations with the humans. And part of it, I'm sure part of it was because he was enjoying it, and part of it was because he wanted to put more of his DNA into the system to evolve them. And this is the biblical thing of the sons of God mated with the daughters of man, or we created man in God's image. This is really the basis of it, at least a huge amount of data would indicate that. You can do your own research. Just look up Enki, Enlil, Anunnaki, Sumeria. You know, there's the university in England that has hundreds of pages of translations from these Sumerian tablets. So this is not channeled information. This is historical. And that we asked some questions on it, and I'm still filling in all the dots. And, for example, the God that spoke to Noah, you know, Noah was saving all the species, was Enki. In fact, in some of the stuff, it said Noah was Enki's son. And the goal was to save all the DNA of all of the beings here on this planet, because there was a deluge that was going to come and destroy everything. And it wasn't clear, well, I haven't read it enough to be sure of saying either the deluge was going to come naturally or it was artificially created by Enlil. And so,
but it says the heating of the heating of the planet and the glacier melted in Antarctica,
yeah.
And so they knew it was going to fall into this year and create a flood.
Was the planet heated naturally, or did somebody provoke that?
My understanding, naturally.
Okay. So, you know, and now I keep doing research on this, and Terry and I did a couple of sessions on it, and she gets really tired when I ask these questions on this stuff. So I don't do it too often, you know, because she has to go really deep to pull information out of such a long time ago. It's easier to pick out information in the present. You know, when somebody asks a question on a Wednesday, it's easier to pick that out than it is to go back 15,000 years. Is that right, Terry? Is that kind of, am I saying it right?
Yeah, it's, the stuff is, like, fallen into, like, it doesn't have any attention on it, and so it needs to be revived.
Right. Well, I wanted to just share a couple of things. Well, maybe before I go back and do that, we have all of Egypt. We have, if you listen to the Egyptian Connection, which is a four-hour workshop, which I did a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I think. It's egypt.intelligent-infinity.com. If you listen to that, it tells the story, briefly, of a past life of Edgar Casey David Wilcock as Ra Ta, and that Ra was making interventions in that period of time through Ra Ta. And I have not figured out completely the connection with Ra and the Anunnaki, if there is a connection. Obviously, there was a lot of pain going on from humans who were suffering. Like, for example, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah was apparently Enlil, the guy that wanted to get rid of the humans, nuking the city, okay? Probably the Tower of Babylon, you know, had some alternative story to it, and I haven't researched it yet. But all of these things that we've read about, even brought up in, this is the real explanation. And if you go in and look at the history of it, you can't, I don't care how religious you are, you can't put this aside, because there's too much documentation. And so now we have Ra coming in, and they're doing all these healings, and there are all these genetic experiments of half man, half animal that are talked about in Edgar Casey. And then the priests of the time which were called the Amun priesthood, took over Ra's intervention and turned it negative, and they ended up using it to control people instead of liberate people. And so for thousands of years, Egypt was under the Amun priesthood. They even took the name Ra, because Ra had become a well-known name because of all the miracles that were going on. And they renamed Ra Amun-Ra. And then according to Carl Rucker, there was an Egyptian pharaoh about 1500 B.C. who suddenly got the idea that all of that stuff was wrong. You know, they were doing sacrifices. They were doing all the things the negative does today. They were controlling people out of fear. The priests had a lot of power. And Akhenaten outlawed it all, okay? And early on in this whole episode, when I had met Daphne, I started getting messages in my dreams. And they were telling me things like, "You're supposed to be the front man. We're not doing this for entertainment. It has a serious purpose. Communication from another dimension, just like Casey. He slept to connect with this dimension." And then I did a channeling with Daphne, and I said, "Who is talking to me?" And they said, "Akhenaten." And then I went a whole line of questioning. Did I know Akhenaten? And they said, "I was his right-hand man. What was his name? Amunhotep." And over a period of time, it started to reveal itself to me that it looked like I may have been Akhenaten. They didn't tell me. They said I was his right-hand man, and that the person that was channeling might have been his famous, beautiful wife, Nefertiti. And in one book I read, it said Akhenaten came from pure Anunnaki stock. So Akhenaten, you know, I'm putting pieces together now. I don't believe this stuff until it all starts to fit together. And so that meant Akhenaten had to be from a descendant of these early E.T. Anunnaki. And then when I asked a question about it, in a session in the past couple of weeks, they said, "I was there, Terry was there." We're talking about in Enlil Enki times. Did they say you were there? They said Daphne and I were there, but I don't know if they said Terry was there. But Terry thinks she was there. She remembers it. And then Akhenaten ended up getting killed. But one of the things Akhenaten did was he took groups of enlightened people. The way it was described, Christed people, people that learned how to hold the Christed energies, sent them in the caves who became the Essenes, and this was like 1,500 years before Jesus, and then 1,500 years later, Jesus was born, and again, in the session we did, the Ra-Jesus connection, it was indicated there was a huge connection between Ra and Jesus. And that, in fact, when I asked the question to Daphne years ago, and I said, "When Jesus said, 'Father, who answered?' She said, 'Ra.'" As they said, if you would understand it, Ra. And so, as I, weave my own story into it, here we have Akhenaten, the Ra group, working with Akhenaten with the idea of creating a support group for Jesus. And that was 1,500 years before Jesus. And that to bring Jesus in took a lot of planning on their part. It doesn't just happen. And this was part of the planning. And of course, every time something happens, what we call the negative comes in and sabotages it. And of course, in the Wilcock material, the Ra group says, "We came to you in Christianity, but we don't often speak in those terms anymore because of the way religion screwed it up. That's a paraphrase, but that's kind of what they said. And I remembered when I was writing that book, where did this come from? Who were they? Why did they say we came to you in Christianity? How are they connected to Jesus? And it was one of the first questions that kept lingering in my mind. Well, there's a couple more things here that there's a lot of, what time is it? 6:32. God, we're moving fast. This is really an amazing topic to talk about because I'm trying to figure out, why am I doing this? Why is this happening for me? A couple of another keys to the puzzle. Those of you that read The Creator Gods of the Physical Universe want to talk to you. And keep in mind, I'm just revealing the facts here. I'm not trying to draw all the conclusions. I'll do that over time. I'm not even implying conclusions, just facts. The first voice that came through, the very first voice, the voice that predicted a newspaper headline in advance, said it was Ptah. And for three times, it was Ptah talking to me and answering questions. And Ptah was extremely articulate and extremely psychic, could see things. And I had learned that there was a woman in Australia that was channeling Ptah by the name of Jenny King, and they said it was the same Ptah. Well, then it went to the Council of An, and I had no idea what the Council of An was. And we had about three sessions with the Council of An. Of course, we're still talking to the Council of An, because we have Ra-An, which is the Council of An. And then it was indicated that the Council of An was a derivative connected to a subgrouping of the Elohim, okay? And that this was all like a precursor, a laying a track so that the Elohim would come through. And so we probably spent maybe at least 2 months before a voice said they were the Elohim, although the Council of An was the Elohim, a subgroup of the Elohim, so they said. And now, if we go back to Enki and Enlil, these are like pieces of the puzzle that are still evolving. Another name for Enki, as he went through history, and he worked with the Egyptians, and in fact, there's a book called Initiation, which talks about this. His name became known as Ptah. And when we were questioning Ptah said they were a longtime associate on the track with Daphne. Enki and Enlil's father on another planet was called An or Anu. Now, that's a lot of names connected. Ptah, An. And we're still figuring out all the connections. But at one point, a couple of weeks ago, Enki was, we're talking about Enki, and he's waiting to talk to us. And I'm waiting to see, do I feel comfortable with this? That's why I say this is a work in progress. Couple of little things that happened along the path here. And we talked about earlier that the Anunnaki needed gold okay? The Anunnaki needed gold for their planet, but it wasn't indicated completely why they needed gold. And there's a product that actually I was reading about. I tried. People have asked me about this product. It's called monatomic gold. And monatomic gold supposedly enhances your psychic centers. And there was a company in Sedona that was selling their version of monatomic gold, and I tried it, and it worked. I could feel it. And at a certain point, I did a session with Terry, and I asked them about this monatomic gold, and they said it was good to take for a short while, or not too much, but if you took too much of it, it would enhance your higher chakras at the expense of your lower chakras. And then I'm studying all this. Keep in mind, I find, and this is a guy, you might want to write him down. When I get more confident, I'll send links out. It's very hard to understand, but he's all over the web. And don't ask me questions about him, because I'm still researching it. But his name is Dan Winter, and he has a huge amount of stuff on Enki and Enlil. And if this stuff is grabbing you, for example, if the Egyptian thing grabs you, the Akhenaten thing grabs you, I'd be willing to bet some of you have lifetimes in Egypt with Akhenaten. And if you listen to that workshop, it will resonate with you, and it'll kind of stimulate the cellular memories of that period. If you connect with Egypt, if you like pyramids, then definitely. The link to that is egypt.intelligent-infinity.com. Egypt.intelligent-infinity.com. And somewhere on the homepage, it links to it. It's a 4-hour workshop, and there's even one point in the workshop where a voice came through in a channeling and identified itself as the soul fragment of Nefertiti that wanted to talk to me. And that is worth the workshop in itself. Unbelievable. And if you're connected to Egypt, you got to listen to that workshop. And then, if you connect with this Enlil Enki thing, this Anunnaki thing, you can do some research and just look up Dan Winter, Anunnaki, Enlil Enki, and it will come up. Now, this stuff is really hard to understand. Dan Winter is very sophisticated, and I've been aware of him for a few years, and even I didn't understand him, and I'm just barely starting to understand him. But there were too many things he mentioned that, or a couple of things he mentioned, I won't say too many, but a couple that we had asked questions about in channelings, and he came up with the same information from a totally different angle. Couldn't have been coincidence. We were both tapping into the same thing. And so I started to think, well, maybe everything he says is right, okay? So one of the things had to do with gold. If you recall, I said that they were using gold to wake up their higher chakras. They were using gold to put in the atmosphere of their planet because they thought it helped them live longer, and that the gold was having a having a negative impact on their system. Deleterious, is that a word, Terry? Deleterious? I don't know. And deleterious. Don't put me saying, was that a word, deleterious? in there, just put in deleterious and cut all this out. Thank you. Right. I mean, sometimes if I sneeze, it'll come out. Wind sneezes. Okay. You can leave sneezes out. And leave descriptions of Terry's funny giggling out. Okay. So I'll just read a couple excerpts from something of Dan Winter. He's got hundreds of pages on the website, on his website, talking about, I mean, and this is too deep to go into, that there was more to the Anunnaki incident than just mining gold and making people, hybrids. And it had something to do with the Anunnaki DNA. If you recall, DNA is the most important tool in your body. Terry, you're making too much background noise. You can leave that out of the transcript, too. Thank you. DNA has got 12 strands. And the way that I've learned to explain this in a way that most people understand is that each strand of DNA is like an antenna into a greater section of the universe. And the first seven strands relate to your first seven chakras. And so each part of your body has a chakra, which is receiving energy and putting out energy. But for that to occur, the strand of DNA, the chakra, has to be open. And in most people, only three strands are open, and maybe part of the fourth strand. And some people, maybe only two strands. So what the strands mean is survival, sex, power, heart, wisdom, communication, psychic sensitivity, your third eye, and the crown chakra, the gateway to intelligent infinity. And the key to opening up your DNA is to be in the field of energy of that particular chakra DNA strand that you're working on. So, for example, if you want to open up your heart, then you go somewhere where someone has their heart open. Or you have a great romantic relationship. That can open up your heart as long as it doesn't close down when they leave you. You can go into a church or a group, and feel that connection. Or you can have a guru, or you can come to our Sunday grid healings. And so many of you are starting to get that that's what's happening there. They're helping us evolve our DNA by being in that shower of energy. And as you come there more often, eventually you start carrying it in your life. And I have so many emails from people that are going through this process. And, you know, I'm only learning about this as I go because I don't, you know, there's no manual on how to do this. But in retrospect, I can see how it's working. And so we are learning how to open our DNA on these calls and on our grid healings. And on this kind of call, our minds are learning how to understand the process so you can integrate it all and see what's going on. Now, apparently, the Anunnaki, even though they were very advanced, they're very old, somehow they could not evolve their DNA past 10 strands. Now, I don't know why that is yet. I haven't figured that out, but that was said, and I don't even know if it's true. And so, when humans were evolving, and they did the hybrid humans, for some reason, and I don't know why yet, supposedly the humans had the potential to have 12-strand DNA. And they were afraid if the humans, what happens is, for better or for worse, the higher DNA evolution will usually dominate the lower evolution. That's why the Orions, the Draco, dominate this world, because they have high DNA evolution, even if they don't have compassion. They have other things up there. And so the Anunnaki were afraid. They wanted to use the humans to help them evolve in some way, but they were also afraid the humans become more powerful than them. Obviously, this we're talking about, they look at things over a long term, not like in 100 years, but 1,000 years or 500,000 years. And they're trying to work things out from a very long-term perspective, very long-term plan to make things go in their direction. And a couple of the things that were kind of amazing that I had come up in channeling questions about this, one of them was about the gold, okay? And when I asked about the gold, the monatomic gold, they said, we recommend not taking too much of it. And, of course, everybody in Sedona was raving about it. And I was doing consulting for a company that was selling it, and I didn't, it never told them about that channeling. The woman that owned the company actually had a reading from Terry, but I never told them about that. I felt really bad. But let's see. Well, now, another guy that's researched this is a guy by the name of Lawrence Gardner. And this guy, Dan Winter, quotes different people like Lawrence Gardner. Lawrence Gardner and others of the Sitchin-Sumerian bloodline studies, Realm of the Ring Lords book, are clear that the great mother Sumerian goddess of the Ubaid, is none other than Inanna, the sister of the half-Draco Sumerian Anunnaki family from Sirius, later called An. The Anunnaki family from Sirius, later called An. And sons. And sons Enki, and then they say Enki was Adonai, Atun, E, Ptah, Lucifer, Hermes, Quetzalcoatl, and versus his more snake-like half-brother, Enlil, who was Yahweh, Michael, Amun, and Amun, the Steiner. Well, maybe they mean Rudolf Steiner. I don't know. Now, I'm not telling you to believe any of this. I don't know how to validate this. But more on what happened became of Enlil, Yahweh, see Anne Rice, Blood and Gold, Origins of the Vampires. The reason Enlil's blood became the blood root of vampires is the physics which the article explains. If you use external sources, addiction in Enlil's case, it was gold powder, manna, ormus, the spice, the white powder, origin of Holy Communion's white wafer, to get change bliss into your DNA. Now, listen to some of those words, manna. You know, in the Bible, manna was the food of the gods, okay? We're talking about this gold, this monatomic gold. Then your blood becomes thick and electrically immortal, but with no way of getting new and self-directing glandular passion of bliss into your DNA, that immortality is nothing more than a permanent astral prison. And again, here I might upset somebody's belief patterns here, but when he talks about astral prison, he says, the Saint Germain and Ascended Master's problem. Just because you don't die anymore does not mean you have escaped being a parasite. If you cannot attract your own charge, and gold powder versus heart. Alchemy's darker moments. Well, what are we saying there? We're saying that we've talked about this at different times. Service to self, service to others, the negative. The negative is limited to getting as high as it can get, and it needs to suck energy from that which is below it rather than from that which is above it because it can't access it. And In some cases, it sounds like this is a choice. Just be good, just be in service, and you can access the higher stuff. But I don't think it's that simple, because if you're going to access the higher stuff, you have to have the 12th strand of DNA open so that you can get through the energies of the highest realm. And if you can't access that strand of DNA, you won't feel it. And so then you keep trying to get energy from the lower realms, but it's an insatiable appetite. You have to keep attracting things, and then you burn them out. And, of course, we've all met people that have endless affairs, endless, you know, they can't sustain themselves. They burn people out. They look for something new all the time. They're restless. And I've had those aspects earlier in my life, so I understand them. It's not to judge it. When you're in that space, it feels like that's who you are. And some of you right now feel like that's who you are. And I'm telling you, the key here is you can shift that. And the way you shift it is you have to find the places where you can tune into the 12-strand DNA broadcast, because that starts rearranging your DNA. Over time, it's a long-term process. I mean, 6 months, a year, unless you've already done a lot of work already, it takes a while. And suddenly, you'll be living in a new place. And what they're saying, what he said here, is exactly what came through a channeling through Terry, where they said that the gold was stop working, okay? And it was actually worse for them than better. That's exactly what was said here. Now, if you notice in the Enlil line, and again, I'm just reading this guy, I'm not saying this is true, you find in the Enlil line people like Archangel Michael, okay? That's who he means, Yahweh. And you know, he makes a note here, and I'm glad he says saying this and not me. He's talking about Jewish people who were under the auspices of Yahweh, had trouble if they were still in that traditional energy line. Many, many Jewish people are not anymore. But if they were tracking that original line, now this is him saying this, that they would be having trouble tapping into their compassion. And he was even implying that that's why the Israelis can be so brutal the Palestinians. I'm going to get emails for this. I'm just reading this guy, and there's aspects that indicate that it's real. But if you don't read it, and I'm pushing your buttons, I'm sorry. This is only the swim call. We're going to move on. And then another thing that came through had to do, you know, I'm always saying that don't believe these people that are channeling, and that that if spacemen land, it's probably not going to be positive. Well, a few years ago, I was giving a talk at a lady's house in Los Angeles. She actually had a very big piece of property, and she invited people to give talks there. And somebody at the door was handing out flyers for Ashtar Command. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Ashtar Command, but there are people all over the world that are hearing voices that say they're part of a space fleet that's surrounding our Earth, and that Jesus is the commander, and they're actually looking for people down here to help them. And the lady whose house we were at was offering her house as a place for their ships to land. Well, she was giving out flyers to everyone that was coming in. And I told Terry, we should do a session on this and check on it. And so we did. And in the session, I didn't know what they were going to say. And the answer really surprised me. I said to myself, can I believe that answer? Can I believe that? Is that true? Because what they said was, Hashtag Command was a giant organic computer that was 20 miles wide that was psychically sending signals to people all over our planet. And essentially, it was negative, and it wasn't real, and it was programming people to have a certain perspective. And this guy, Dan Winter, let's see if I can find it. Yahweh's ancestors are the reason, and this guy likes to, he likes to talk about movies like Star Wars, Star Trek, because...
658.
Oh, it's 658. Thank you. Well, in any case, Dan Winter talks about Ashtar being a giant computer. My clock is slow. It's at 6:54. Dan Winters talks about Ashtar being a giant computer run by the negative. And exactly, that was, I found that 2 years after Terry had come up with that. And who ever heard of anyone talking about a giant computer broadcasting channeled messages? So that was another tie-in. There's others. You can go look them up. Dan Winter. And I hope